The reading this morning is taken from Psalm 48 and can be found on page 571 in the Pew Bible. Great is the Lord and most worthy of praise, in the city of our God, his holy mountain. It is beautiful in its loftiness, the joy of the whole earth. Like the utmost heights of Zaphon is Mount Zion, the city of the great king. God is in her citadels. He has shown himself to be her fortress. When the kings joined forces, when they advanced together, they saw her and were astounded. They fled in terror. Trembling seized them there, pain like that of a woman in labor. You destroy them like ships of Tarshish, shattered by an east wind. As we have heard, so have we seen in the city of the Lord Almighty, in the city of our God. God makes her secure forever, Selah. Within your temple, O God, we meditate on your unfailing love. Like your name, O God, your praise reaches to the ends of the earth. Your right hand is filled with righteousness. Mount Zion rejoices. The villages of Judah are glad because of your judgments. Walk about Zion, go round her, count her towers, consider well her ramparts, view her citadels, that you may tell of them to the next generation. For this God is our God for ever and ever. He will be our guide even to the end.
So I want to play a game. Anybody up for a game? What game would you like to play? Well, here's a thought. If you were a building, what kind of building might you be? If you were a building, what kind of building might you be? You know, would you be like the Eiffel Tower because you're tall and slim and elegant? Would you be a hospital because you're a caring kind of a person? Would you be a shop because you like retail therapy? Would you be a greenhouse because you're a nurturer? Would you be a school because you're an educator? Would you be a garden shed that's kind of falling down and dilapidated? What kind of building would you be? Got an answer? Got something in your head? I want you to share it with me afterwards. But here's another question. If God were a building, what kind of building would he be? And the answer is found in this psalm. But not exclusively in this psalm. You find it over and over and over again. That God is a fortress. God is a fortress. And if you remember nothing else today, I want you to take that thought home with you and keep it with you. God is a fortress. And he will be your fortress if that is what you want him to be. But God is a fortress. This psalm, Psalm 48, would have been sung by the pilgrims on their way to Jerusalem for one of the festivals. They had a number of festivals and they would all head towards Jerusalem. It's an amazing city. There would have been great singing, great joy, great color, just a great spectacle as they made their way to Jerusalem. It would have been like a football crowd going to a football match and they were chanting and they would have been singing. This would have been one of the songs they would have sung. Great is the Lord and most worthy of praise in the city of our God, in the mountain of his holiness. Beautiful situation. The joy of the whole earth is Mount Zion. They would have been singing these words as they approached Jerusalem for that festival. It would have been an amazing spectacle because this was the city of God. This was a great place. It wasn't lofty in the sense that it wasn't like the Alps that you had to climb a high mountain to get to the temple, to get to God. No, it was very ordinary in very many ways. But it was a special place because he was there. God was there. It was the city of our God. It was beautiful because he was there. And these pilgrims longed to be with him. They were on their way to Jerusalem, not for this city, but because he was there. And they wanted to celebrate. And hopefully as we come to church, we don't come just because we always come or because this is a lovely place to be or because we'll see her. No, we go to celebrate him together corporately to worship our God. Great is the Lord and most worthy of praise. So they were heading to Jerusalem. It was a beautiful place because he was there and it was a secure place because he was there. He was their fortress. And that's what verses 1 to 3 are all about. It was a secure place because he was there. This was the capital city. It hadn't always been. This wasn't the place where the first King Saul reigned from, no. And it wasn't the place where King David reigned from the first 7 years of his kingship. But once he had overcome all military odds and took Jerusalem, he made it his capital city. And he brought the Ark of the Covenant into it. If you were here last week, we thought about that, how they brought the Ark of the Covenant into the city with great pomp and ceremony and singing again and lots of sacrifice as the Ark of the Covenant, the symbol of God's presence, moved into the city of Jerusalem. This is where God presenced himself. And this was a city that God made his capital. It was a beautiful place because he was there. It was a secure place because he was there. He was their fortress. But even within the psalm, it begins to point away not from this earthly city, this historic city in a geographic part of the world. It begins to point away from this city to something greater. Verse 2, in the city of our God, his holy mountain, beautiful in its loftiness, the joy of the whole earth. The joy of the whole earth. And then verse 10, like your name, O God, your praise reaches to the ends of the earth. Your right hand is filled with righteousness. It reaches to the ends of the earth. It points beyond the historic city. And this is picked up in other parts of the Old Testament as well. Consider Isaiah chapter 2. This is what Isaiah, son of Amos, saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. In the last days, the mountain of the Lord's holy temple will be established as the highest of the mountains. It will be exalted above the hills, and all the nations will stream to it. Many peoples will come and say, come, let's go to the mountain of the Lord, to the temple of the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways, so that we may walk in his paths. The law will go out from Zion, the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He will judge between the nations and will settle disputes for many peoples. They will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not take up sword against nation, nor will they train for war anymore. Come, descendants of Jacob, let us walk in the light of the Lord. So the expectation of something greater, something universal, something eternal is all the way through the Old Testament. It's picked up in the New by Paul and in the book of Hebrews and in the book of Revelation. Time and again, they're looking for a new Jerusalem, a greater Jerusalem, an eternal Jerusalem, where God would be with his people forever, people from every nation, not just the Jews in Jerusalem, but people from every nation and tribe and tongue. So it constantly keeps pointing away from this historic city to a greater city. Verses 4 to 7, if you've got your Bible open, that would be great to look at. Verses 4 to 7 talk about the city under attack. When the kings joined forces, when they advanced together, they saw her and were astounded. They fled in terror. Trembling seized them. Pain like that of a woman in labor. You destroyed them like ships of Tarshish, shattered by an east wind. Now, historically, Jerusalem was attacked many times. There was always an enemy willing to attack Jerusalem, to attack God's people over and over again. So this could have been a number of occasions, but it was referring to an occasion when they were attacked. But it may well be, as some of the commentators say, a particular episode in 2 Kings chapter 19, when the Assyrians, who were strong, led siege to Jerusalem. They had already overcome the surrounding people. They had destroyed 46 towns and villages around Jerusalem, wiped them out, and they were moving inexorably towards Jerusalem. They led siege to it, and then they mocked the God of Israel. You can read it in 2 Kings. The people stood on the walls, and the Assyrians said, you may as well surrender to us, because you can never win. Your God will not protect you. That's what the other people thought. They thought their God would protect them. But he didn't. Why would your God be any different? Why don't you just surrender? and they mocked the God of Israel. Now, what would you feel, what would you be like if you were in that city, knowing that this amazing empire, Assyria, who had destroyed 46 towns and villages around you, were camped outside your front door, and they're saying, why don't you surrender or die? What would you do? Well, the king inside was frightened. And he prayed. Hezekiah prayed to the Lord. The Assyrians had sent a letter asking him to surrender. So he went into the temple and he laid the letter before the Lord. And he said, Lord, what are we going to do? These people are strong. We're outnumbered. They're too big for us. But what can we do? And Isaiah, the prophet, came to Hezekiah and he says to him, stand firm. Do not be frightened. The Lord will be your fortress. You don't need to do anything. You just need to stand firm and he will do it for you. And that night, it's in 2 Kings, that night, the angel of the Lord passed through the Assyrian camp and 186,000 warriors died. The Lord is your fortress. You don't have to do anything. Just trust. Stand firm and he will fight for you. It's the message all the way through the scriptures, but that's what happened. 186,000 warriors died that night. Isn't that amazing? And even after that, the Assyrian king Sennacherib was assassinated by two of his sons. This great and powerful nation ripped apart by God. We try to put up many defenses in our lives. We think of ways to protect our buildings, to protect our homes, to protect our lives. We get health insurance. We try to save money in the bank for a rainy day. We buy stocks and shares. We put our money into property. We can do all sorts of things to try and protect us for the future. Sometimes they go up and sometimes they go down. Sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. But the Bible teaches us over and over again, the only security we have, the only protection we have, is in God himself. He is a fortress. And he will be your fortress if that's what you want him to be. This kind of theme of the city and the temple is picked up in the New Testament. And this kind of idea of trusting in him is scattered throughout. There's that great passage in Philippians chapter 4. Don't be anxious about anything. But by prayer and petition, bring your request to God. Just like the king did. Lord, what are we going to do? Stand firm. God answers prayer, and the peace that passes all understanding enters into our lives, enters into our world, because we can trust him. Absolutely, we can trust him completely. So if we're worried about anything, if we're worried about our health, if we're worried about our future, if we're worried about our families, if we're worried about anything, the Bible teaches, don't be anxious. Pray. Trust. Follow. Again, these verses point towards or away from the historical city of Jerusalem that God would not always protect the city. And Ezekiel chapter 8, 9, 10, and 11, which are wonderful verses in Ezekiel. Maybe you've never even read the book of Ezekiel. Maybe you think it's hard and old-fashioned and Old Testament. But these chapters 8, 9, 10, and 11 are amazing. Because Ezekiel has this vision of Jerusalem, God's holy city, where the Ark of the Covenant was, where he presenced himself. It was a beautiful place because he was there. It was a safe place because he was there. But Ezekiel has this vision of the Spirit of God leaving the temple and moving out of Jerusalem. Why was that? And over again, Ezekiel said to the people inside the walls, you need to get your act together. The place was full of sin, full of idolatry, And over again, the prophets were saying, come back to the Lord your God. Come back to the Lord your God. And time again, they said, forget it. We're going to do our own thing. And so he had this vision of the Spirit leaving the temple and moving out beyond the beyond the city walls. And that happened. And the city was eventually destroyed. Not because the forces outside were overwhelmingly great, although they may well have been, but the city was destroyed because the Lord was no longer in the city. The Lord was no longer a fortress to the city. He had left like he said he would, and nobody listened. But although God had abandoned the city, he had not abandoned the people. And in chapter 11 of Ezekiel, Ezekiel talks about that. God was still with the people even though he had left the city and left it open to destruction. But the New Testament again picks up this theme of the city and the temple of God. And in 1 Peter chapter 2, it talks about a new kind of city, a new kind of temple. Not this historic geographic city of Jerusalem, but a new temple. As you come to him, the living stone, Jesus, rejected by humans but chosen by God and precious to him, so you also, like living stones, are being built into a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, offering spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. For in Scripture it says, see, I lay a stone in Zion, a chosen and precious cornerstone, and the one who trusts in him will never be put to shame. This is a temple not made of bricks, but of people like you and me. And again, in Ephesians chapter 2, it uses language that was normally reserved for the tabernacle, for the temple, to describe not a building, but Paul is describing a people and Gentile people at that. So then, you are no longer strangers and aliens, but you are citizens with the saints and also members of the household of God, built upon the foundation of the apostles and prophets, with Christ Jesus himself as the cornerstone. In him, the whole structure is joined together and grows into a holy temple in the Lord, in whom you also are being built spiritually into a dwelling place for God. God does not dwell in a building made of hands. God dwells in a new building, a new city, a new temple, made up of people like you and me, people who love him and who trust him. We are the temple. We are the city of God. And he is our fortress. Philippians chapter 2 talks about our citizenship being in heaven. Jesus talks about building a temple that will never be destroyed. I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. He would build a city, an eternal city, the city that even Abraham looked forward to, whose architect is God, made up of people like you and me. In this world of change, we have many insecurities. Things change around us so quickly. Our political life, morality, scientifically, economically, in every way, life changes so quickly. Change, change, change. And what can we do about it? And even as we go into a new church year, we don't know what the future holds. We don't know what changes there will be. We don't know what challenges lie ahead. But the one thing that we can know, and we must know, is that God is a fortress. And whatever challenges lie ahead for any of us, whatever pain there is out there, and that's just life, can be painful and challenging. But if we put our trust in him, and he is totally trustworthy, if we put our trust in him, we will not be disappointed. He will not let us down. Will bad things happen to us? Yeah, that's just life. We're a part of this fallen world. But he will be our fortress. He will be our refuge. He will be the rock on which we stand as he builds us into this beautiful temple for himself. God is a fortress. Do you believe that? Do you want him to be your fortress? He longs to be your fortress. Jesus said, don't build up treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy, but build up treasure in heaven where it will always be safe. So if you remember nothing else today, remember that line, God is a fortress, and he will be for you if that is what you desire.